Either that or it's got a very short clone.
So, we're talking Friday the 13th, the original, the OG.
1980.
And, of course, I think it's important to say everything we say is going to be brimming with spoilers, because the movie's from 1980. Everyone should have seen it by now.
And it's a 42-year-old movie. I don't think spoilers actually apply if something is more than a few years old. So,
true.
And here's the thing I will say, because we're going to talk a little bit about the movie itself, not just the horror hunks. The horror hunks is going to be like the big chunk of it, but we'll talk a little bit about the movie. I will say that I tried to go into it watching it this time as if I'd never seen it before. And it's kind of one of those things where I was wondering, what was it like seeing this in 1980 in the theater for the first time, having no idea? We go in knowing that Mrs. Voorhees is the killer, and they set it up as kind of this whodunit throughout the whole movie. And so it's kind of interesting to look at it as if I didn't know that. Of course, I did know it, so the lens isn't perfect, but that's how I tried to watch the movie this time.
Well, and fun fact that you made me think of for some reason, they actually, the guy who wrote it, came up with the title Friday the 13th before even having an idea in mind of what the movie was going to be about, and even started marketing it. He marketed it on a poster in Variety as the most terrifying film ever made, with the title card Friday the 13th.
And it wasn't made, right?
It wasn't even written.
It wasn't written. It wasn't cast. It was just, we're going to get this movie going, but you think it's already done.
And that, like, he caught the eye of like three investors who gave him, I think, $500,000 to get the movie made. So
yeah. Anyway. Oh, I'm Chris, by the way.
Well, see, that's why we're.
Yeah,
I'm Stu.
I don't know how much background anybody wants to know about us. I mean, we're both horror fans. We're both gays. We decided to come together and make a podcast about being gay horror fans, right? Which I think is a big chunk of the horror fan population. So,
and see, you say that, but I would argue the other way, because no one else I know, you may be the only homo I know who loves horror.
See, I see,
like, oh no, I'm so scared of horror.
I know you're not a big, like, Twitter or even like a big social media person in general, but there's a huge queer horror following on Twitter. And so I fall into that kind of corner of Twitter. So I just assume that that's the biggest chunk of the fans are, you know, queer people. And there's been, you know, tons of conversations about why queer people love horror, and it has a lot to do with that kind of like outsider feeling, which we're not going to delve into, but unless you want to, but I don't.
I mean, maybe we will, because when we get to whenever we review Friday the 13th part 2, one of the main characters in that, I mean, he was a closeted gay man, and there was some stuff happening on set and behind the scenes that I think is like real interesting, especially when you're talking about horror movies and queer culture.
Tell us a little bit about you, because you are kind of like you're kind of like the anti-me sometimes. I feel like you're very outdoorsy, you're very into nature and everything. So how about that?
That sums me up, kind of. I love the outdoors and nature, which is funny because of how much horror media I ingest.
You shouldn't go in the woods.
I mean, it's, you know, Karen Kilgariff. I can't ever say their name right. The my favorite murder gals, don't go into the woods. I'm like, no, go into the woods. We should all go into the woods more.
I will add on to this and say that you are the person who will send me all of these clips on Instagram that are like, listen to these people as they maybe encounter a Sasquatch or like skinwalkers or something. I'm like, why do you go camping and then send me these clips of people who are terrified in the woods? It just doesn't make sense.
And like, so, and like, I'll listen to like creepypasta podcasts or anything like that, and it's, you know, immediately terrifying. I'm listening to it being like, oh my god, I'd be so scared, oh my god, I'd be terrified. And then I'm like, but I've been in the woods, and I've been just like sleeping in a tent in the middle of the Black Hills with no other people around, and been like, happy as a clam, time to go to sleep. And
you can't see me, listeners, but my face is saying a lot right now.
I somehow managed to separate the two concepts. Like, so like going back to Friday the 13th, if I found out that there was a camp that had all of these murders and these like buildings were just abandoned, do you know who would have their ass in the canoe getting over to that camp to like take photos and explore as fast as possible? Probably without a fear in the world. The only thing I'd be thinking about is, I hope I don't see any snakes.
You'd be so dead. You'd die. You would die so fast in these movies because you wouldn't run away from anything. You would hear a noise and be like, oh, I wonder what that is. Let's go check it out, which is the perfectly wrong thing to do.
It's completely possible that maybe like a very accurate statement.
You're like Fred in the Scooby Gang, who's always like, well, let's go investigate. And it's like, ruh-roh, Raggy, no, we're not going.
Let's do a brief rundown of Friday the 13th.
So Friday the 13th, y'all know it already by now, but 1980 slasher movie, essentially a group of camp counselors are going to help reopen a summer camp that's been abandoned for several years because of, you know, the locals say it's cursed. There's been some tragedies. There was a drowning. There were a few murders. In the grand scheme of slasher movies, the things that happened at Camp Crystal Lake were not actually all that dramatic. A kid drowned and then two people got murdered a year later. I don't think that if we were to watch it now, it would have been like 17 people got murdered, and that's why it closed. But for 1980, this was very much like the camp is cursed, don't go back. And of course, they go back. And I don't know if the camp is necessarily cursed, but some bad shit goes down. And we end up with one of our kind of inaugural slashers, right? It's by far not one of the first, but I think it was one of those slasher movies that jump-started the genre for the 80s.
It definitely, I think, and it, I may be wrong, but I think it might be the movie that, like, you know, cemented the idea of horny teenagers working at a summer camp.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, because it's kind of known now, and I don't think we can... I don't think it's an assumption to say that it's very much a ripoff of Halloween, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
They took the idea of these babysitters who Halloween is a, you know, it's a movie that has its horny moments, but they took the idea of these babysitters being stalked by a killer and, you know, brought it to a summer camp and made it a little bit sexier, made it a little bit more fun, in my opinion. And you got this where Halloween people look at it and they say this movie is, you know, a horror masterpiece. I think Friday the 13th, and you look at it and you say, this movie is very influential, but it's not great. It's very low budget. I think it's very fun. The Friday the 13th franchise is legitimately my favorite horror franchise of all time. Throw out Halloween. I love Scream dearly, but Friday the 13th is my franchise that I love, and I will admit that the first movie is just, a lot of the movies actually are just not that good, but they're fun, and you know, they have the kills, and they have these characters that, you know, you're kind of just waiting for them to get picked off.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, the hunks of the movie, I made a list.
I made a list also.
Good.
Which I have to say, the first kill of this movie is a guy.
And I actually listed him as the first hunk. He doesn't even get a name that I heard, but he's 1958 camp counselor. and so the rest of my list, 1958 camp counselor, Steve, Jack, Bill, and Ned. And I'm not sure. I don't think I missed anybody.
Wait, which one was Kevin Bacon?
Kevin Bacon is Jack. That's a perfect point that kind of goes along with the idea of this podcast, because we are kind of breaking down how these men are viewed in the movie and how they're treated. And the one thing that I noticed as I was taking notes throughout the movie, I couldn't keep their names straight.
Yeah.
Because to be completely honest, their names really aren't that important. These guys
have generic names.
They have generic names. They've got generic pretty much everything. I actually started keeping them apart from each other on my list by what they were wearing.
Me too.
because they don't have personalities, really. Kevin Bacon's character, Jack, he's, you know, kind of the more laid back, easygoing, like weed smoking guy. Mm-hmm. But even that on him is really, really tame. And I don't know if it was a product of because it was the 1980s and they couldn't go too heavy into things like that, or if it was just like these characters don't matter as people. They are victims. Because another thing that I noticed when I was making my notes was that usually slasher movies, they have the final girl, right? And this movie does have a pretty cool final girl in Alice, but there's no final boy. None of the men survive this movie, which I think also goes to say a little bit about how those types of characters were treated at the time. You know, if you look at a horror movie from today, usually there's two survivors, right? The guy and the girl. Mm-hmm. There may be like a little love interest between them. But the 80s, you know, if you were a guy, you probably weren't making it out of the movies alive.
I don't think any guy made it. Well, other than maybe the cop. The cop that shows that maybe the only man who survives this movie.
Yeah, and it's
or maybe
he,
even
I mean,
the franchise. Because we've got the people in town.
Yeah.
Who don't
and
die.
I don't really look at them as, you know, they're characters, obviously, but we see them, what, for a couple minutes?
Yeah, they're not.
And I mean, as you get later in the series, which we have not decided how we're going to break down some of these series. We don't know which movies we're going to hit on and what we're not. But once you get later in the series, you know, you do have some male survivors. But this first installment, like, everybody is getting just knocked off real fast.
Yeah.
How do you kind of feel about the movie as a whole? Like, what are your thoughts about how it goes as far as a, because it is kind of setting the tone for slashers.
Well, I saw Friday the 13th when I was really, really young because my grandpa used to rent horror movies on the weekend and I would get to stay up and watch them. He was also sadistic and loved tormenting me. So he would always rent a horror movie. And it was one of those where, like, you know, you're a kid, you want to look away, but you can't. Mm-hmm. And eventually I fall asleep in the living room and he'd always leave me down there and I'd wake up in the middle of the night with all the lights off screaming. It happened at least once a week. And I didn't, you know, I knew what was coming, but he'd rent a horror movie and I saw the like covers of them when we'd go to the video store. So I knew what I was in store for, but still did it, which I guess nothing's changed. As a whole, it's a fun horror movie by today's standards. And mm-hmm. I think even then, that's what they were going for. Even the producer said, like, he made it to be a fun cash grab.
Yeah, and that's something I was going to say was that he made it just to basically pay the bills, right? Mm-hmm. It was like, well, horror's getting bigger. We need the money. Let's churn this movie out, make some bank, and then move on to the next thing. I don't think they had any idea that it was going to turn into a franchise. I don't think they had any idea that it was going to be one of the most well-known series in horror for, you know, however many years to come. I mean, there's still, I think the Friday the 13th prequel HBO series was just announced a few weeks ago. Yep. They're still making Friday the 13th content. There hasn't been a movie since 2009, but there's been the video game. There's this new series coming out. There's been comics. There's always something Friday the 13th mm-hmm. happening. And I think that's, it tells you that it's a series with longevity, even though, like I said before, most of the movies aren't great. They're fun, but they're not great.
People love psycho killers.
Mm-hmm.
Which also another fact that I found was it came out the same time, maybe even the same weekend as The Shining, and it actually made more money than The Shining.
Oh, wow. I did not know. I knew they both came out in 1980, but I didn't know they came out like around the same time.
It came out, I don't know. I once again did not go too deep on my research. I just found that, wrote it down. But yeah, it said that it came out the same time as The Shining, and it made more money than The Shining, which is surprising. I don't know if that's in like perpetuity or if it was just like opening time that it made more money. But
yeah, one of the things that I was interested in when I was kind of reading up on the movie a little bit, because I mean, again, I've seen it 15, 20 times, but I don't know a lot about the production or anything like that. One of the things that I read was that when they were making it, when they were writing it and casting it, they didn't really subscribe to the idea that, you know, the whole like have sex and die smoke weed and die. Mm-hmm. It was just kids having fun and then they get killed. Yeah. Bad things happening to good people. And it made me start to think there really aren't any bad people in this movie. Because,
well,
you know, like
notes, there aren't any bad people, but while watching it and taking notes, I was like writing little things down. And it goes back to one of our hunks who I'm using that extremely loosely, Steve.
Yeah,
he is wearing, when we first meet Steve, he is shirtless and he's wearing Izzy Dukes and a bandana.
And a bandana. Yeah. Gay icon, right?
Yeah. But he is also hitting on our final girl, Alice, who is she supposed to be a counselor or is she one of the...
She's a counselor, and one of the IMDb trivias that I read, and I don't remember hearing this in the movie, but I could have missed it. It says that they had an affair, and that's why she's kind of uncomfortable around him.
Well, okay.
I don't remember them saying that.
It was very implicit because in my little notes, I put he is a creep and he is too old for Alice, because when she's outside fixing up stuff, he comes around back shirtless in his little Daisy Dukes and is like... She's talking about how she has to go back to California, and he's begging her to stay for another week. And then he said something about, like, them. It's nothing is explicitly stated, but I figured it out watching that. And then he, like, goes up and, like, creepily moves her hair, and I'm like, he's too old for her.
Yeah, he is definitely too old for her. I picture her as probably, like, 17-ish. But you can never tell in the 80s because they were all played by like 25 and 30 year olds. But sure. For my Steve notes, I wrote down shirtless, bandana, nerdy face, cut off jorts, seductive personality, ? Because it did seem that he was like trying to kind of come on to her a little bit.
It was not even a little bit. It was.
But it was also the 80s. So I was like, maybe that's just how people acted. I don't know.
That's true. The 80s were a weird time, which this movie in today's standards is extremely problematic.
Yeah, they're one of the things that stuck out to me, because aside from the characters not having a lot of personalities, I think the two hunks who had the most kind of set personalities were Bill was kind of like the macho jock, mm-hmm. even though it's not hammered into us like it is kind of now. And then Ned is this jokester, right? And he's like the lovable goofball. I wasn't even 100% sure if he would qualify as a hunk, but he does make it a little ways into the movie. But he, you know, he has some problematic jokes that pop up. That made me, you know, kind of cringe at him and a little uncomfortable. But again, in 1980, probably nobody batted an eye at what he was doing.
See, I put Ned on my hunk list and then I crossed out his name and wrote Ned isn't too annoying.
To be a hunk?
Yes.
I think he had a shirtless scene, so he became a hunk for that reason alone.
He had a t-shirt wrapped around his briefs. Normally, I'd be like, yeah, I'm on board with that. But
yeah, and
he also is way too over the top. And I'm like, this is the kind of person who, if you were really around them and they were like this all the time, they were always on, you'd be like, I've got to get away from this motherfucker before I kill them.
He's on par with Shelley from part 3 for like most annoying character of the whole series.
Yep.
But I like him when he's not being over the top. I think he kind of has some like endearing qualities, but then he turns around and pretends to be drowning and forces either Brenda or Marcy, I can't remember which one it is, to like make out with him basically because they think he's drowned. Yes. And they're trying to give him mouth to mouth. And I'm like, one, that's a very like 80s throwaway joke, but it's so uncomfortable to watch it now.
Yes.
And know that like that's just not – that's scummy behavior. That's not goofball behavior. That's like – gross restraining order behavior.
But even then it was written to be endearing, because the girl, when he like grabs her head and starts pulling her down, she's like, oh, Nettie.
Oh no, yeah, she thinks it's hilarious.
She thinks it's hilarious.
They all do. Like, I would have punched him in the face. But another thing that, going back to that scene, all my notes say about it are Kevin Bacon speedo. So
Kevin Bacon and Bill both are rocking the speedo.
I will just say I've had a severe crush on Kevin Bacon since I saw Tremors. And so I didn't even notice that Bill was in the scene, to be honest. But, and it's so funny because the character of Jack, Kevin Bacon's character, he's not specifically hunky by today's standards anyway. But he does just kind of have a charm to him. He's very suave. He is maybe the only character, the only male character we see in the movie to have sex. And I just, I kind of wish he was the final boy of the movie. Because I think he could have definitely made it out or made it to the end. And it would have felt right. There was just something about Bill that, and I think it's because they were trying to use him as a red herring as the killer. There was something about Bill that I just didn't really feel like he deserved to make it as far into the movie as he did.
I think Bill was supposed to be written as the hunky, suave, silent type. Because, like, the scene where he's playing guitar, absolutely. That's actually him playing guitar. He's somebody's son.
Bing Crosby.
He's Bing Crosby's son, and that was actually him playing the guitar.
Yeah, and he's definitely, this is where the movie confuses me a little bit, because he is set up from the jump to be kind of like the hero, right? He's the male, he's the final boy, even though he dies, but they set him up to be the hero. His first scene, he's kind of rugged, he's like shirtless in the white pants, painting the fencing or whatever it is, and he's just kind wearing of like suspenders. Overly macho, wearing suspenders, also kind of gay, but
extremely.
So he's like set up to be like the hunk of the movie, right? But what confuses me is then he is then gone for like 30 to 40 minutes of the movie, because I think we're supposed to wonder if he's the killer. So it's like you can't set up your final boy as like this macho hunk hero and then have him vanish and make us think that he's killing people. Maybe that wasn't the intention, but I literally wrote down, where is Bill? Because Jack and Marcy are off having sex, Ned's dead, and then everybody else is playing strip Monopoly, right? Mm-hmm. Bill is nowhere to be found. He is not mentioned. So I think they wanted us to wonder, like, oh, is he like picking people off? Because there really aren't a lot of suspects in the movie.
That's very true.
Part of me also wonders if they wanted to set Steve up as a possible red herring. But then it's kind of conveyed to us that he's just at the diner the whole time. So he obviously couldn't be running around the camp killing people if he's hanging out at the diner. And really, that doesn't leave anybody else who we've seen. So
I honestly don't think there was that much thought put into it.
Maybe I'm overthinking it, but like my thought process was like, oh, maybe they wanted us to think it's Bill. Because we don't see Pamela Voorhees until like 2 minutes before we learn she's killing people.
Yeah.
I don't think
they wrote it to be that way at all. I think we can think of it that way, but at the time, from like what I, you know, have gleaned from the interviews and stuff that I read, it does not seem like they were trying to set that up at all. It's completely possible. Maybe it was a happy accident, but I didn't even think about that. But now I think maybe I have to rewatch it and be like, is Bill the killer?
I'm going to pretend that it was intentional, because otherwise he's literally just not in the movie. And that's a little more annoying to think, like, where is this character? Because, I mean, you'd think that your main hunk would be in the strip Monopoly scene. So
that's true.
How did you kind of think about how the, like, sex and nudity – I don't think there's any explicit nudity in the movie, but it is kind of a sexy movie in a way.
There is no explicit nudity. I wrote a little note down of that. But, I mean, we've got what I think is funny for being an 80s movie and for what we now consider horror tropes. We have the guys who are far more exposed than the girls.
That's what I was going to say. Kevin Bacon.
One girl in down. A two-piece for a minute. But other than that, we've got Kevin Bacon prancing around in his little Speedo.
Yeah, so you've got Kevin Bacon and Bill in their Speedos. You've got Ned and his tidy whities doing the really inappropriate joke.
And he's also in some short jorts.
He's
rocking some Daisy Dukes.
You've got Steve and his whole get up in the beginning. But the girls, we really don't see a lot of them exposed, which I genuinely think is especially for the time, I think that's good, because even today, you're going to turn on a horror movie and you're going to see, you know, bare breasts before you see a man's butt. And you're never going to see a man's dick in a horror movie, rarely. So I kind of like that they, again, they maybe unintentionally, but they flipped that idea on its head. And we get these kind of men running around with their shirts off or running around in their Speedos or underwear. And then when Brenda is about to get killed near the end, she's in like in bed, but she's wearing a full on like ankle length nightgown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of funny because they could have very easy sexualized her and put her in her like underwear, but they didn't. And I think that that's actually kind of a cool thing.
I'm also going to point out that during the sex scene, Kevin Bacon is wearing a shirt afterward.
He takes the shirt off while they're making out because of the lighting. I thought that he was on the bottom and she was on top. And then he starts to take his shirt off. And I was like, oh, that's Kevin Bacon. Cause his hair is like kind of shaggy too.
Yeah.
And then so like afterwards, I'm guessing he just put it back on after the sex, but
he did, which in my little notes, he put the shirt back on. And then I figured out the why it was for, the kill. Cause he the dies prosthetic. Right after he gets an arrow shoved through his neck.
Looking at our hunks, looking at the kills, who do you think got the best one?
I'm going to say Jack got the best kill.
I think it's kind of a no-brainer.
Jack represents, he literally, like, he is the trope of don't have sex, don't do drugs, because he just had sex, and he's lighting up a joint, and he gets an arrow through the back of his neck.
Yeah.
And it's on screen.
And that's the thing, is I think the only, as far as the men go, because Marcy's death is pretty legit with the axe to the face, but as far as the men go, the only one that would even maybe be comparable is like Bill has a really cool reveal of being arrowed to a door.
Yeah.
But we don't see it happen. You know, Alice is running around in her rightful, but also a little obnoxious state of just terror, right? And she's looking for Bill and she opens this door and he's, you know, been arrowed to the back of the door several times. And it's a really cool reveal, but we don't see it happen. It's like a lot of the kills in this movie.
No, it's off screen. So
Again, if it wasn't off screen, we wouldn't get the reveal, but
there's creative ways of doing both, it probably again was the budget, which her fight with Mrs. Voorhees is so annoying. I don't know, maybe it was suspenseful at the time, because every single time she meets up with her, they wrestle around for a second, she knocks out Mrs. Voorhees, and she runs off to the next place and hides. And then Mrs. Voorhees finds her, they wrestle for a minute, she knocks out Mrs. Voorhees, and then she runs away. And it goes like that, like 3 or 4 times.
I think they definitely did a lot of padding for this movie, because the fight scenes with Mrs. Voorhees are a little drawn out. They utilize the slow-mo at the end, which I don't love because it's just very bad slow-mo.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have like it feels like it's about 20 minutes, but the scene of her making coffee while Bill is kind of out investigating what's going on. They know that something is going on because they found a bloody axe. But then she goes back to the cabin and she
bed.
Takes a
nap. They found a bloody axe tucked into bed.
I think my favorite quote of this movie is actually when they do find that axe, Alice says, "What is going on?" And I'm like, I'm sure that would be a genuine reaction, but the way she says it is just borderline hilarious to me.
Yeah. All the camp counselor actors were actually stage actors.
So there has to be kind of that, they're going to have that inflection that's a little different. Yeah.
They intentionally did that because they didn't want seasoned actors. They wanted stage actors who were going to kind of, because they were all teenagers, play it up and be playful and, you know, a little bit too much. And they got what they paid for.
And you know what, though? This is a personal preference. It's completely subjective. I don't think the acting in the movie is bad.
I don't either. Like, they even seem, Mrs. Voorhees,
like, it's not like good movie acting, but they seem genuine.
Like Mrs. Voorhees is doing the voice of Jason. I think, I don't know if there's anyone today who could do that without pulling it off, without it being like, this is the cringiest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, even watching it now, it's convincing enough that I'm not like, oh, I'm uncomfortable watching this. I'm just like, that's creepy.
But, no, and I think it depends on how you view it, because it could be very easy to watch her performance and say, what were they thinking? This woman is awful. But it is so unhinged and it's so like subtly over the top that I actually think it's genius.
Yeah, exactly.
There is not a shred of uncertainty that this woman is bonkers, right? And it's kind of this cool reveal, because Alice runs to her thinking that she is her savior, right? I don't know if we're supposed to know right away that she's the killer, because she rolls up in the Jeep from the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. But if we don't know, she forgets,
because we saw the Jeep, but Steve also drove a Jeep.
Yeah, that's true.
So I guess you're right. I guess your point from earlier is right. We're supposed to be like, who done it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I take back what I said. You may be absolutely right. I totally forgot that they both drove a Jeep.
They both drive. Yeah, because it's kind of weird. We see when Annie, the counselor who's barely in the movie, we think she's going to be the main character in the beginning. But, you know, she gets in this Jeep with a mystery driver who kills her. And we know nothing about who it is. But then you have two characters who drive a Jeep, right? The only thing that I wish they would have done was maybe give us a little more time with Mrs. Voorhees to kind of ponder if it could be her. Because if you think about it, we have all of these murders happening. We have these bodies being moved around and strung up different places. You're not going to think that I don't want to guess her age, but a middle-aged woman would be able to accomplish these things, right? So I'm sure it was pretty shocking, but I wish we would have had a little bit more of her as Mrs. Voorhees and not just as the killer.
Oh, I think so too. Like, I think then it would work. Now it would be totally predictable. But then if she were in the movie from the very beginning, I think it would have been a shocker. You'd have been like, wait, what?
If you're going to rank Friday the 13th with all of the other like big horror movies, it's more fun than A Nightmare on Elm Street. It is more fun than Child's Play. It is top of the tier for me as far as horror franchises go.
That, well, it was one of the first, maybe one of the first horror movies where it was supposed to be scary and fun at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I think that's one of the things. It ranks so high on your list, and it ranks high on my list too. I don't know if it ranks higher than Child's Play. I don't know.
Child's Play has some like fun performances. It is such an original movie with the idea of it being, you know, a doll. But, you know, yeah, Friday the 13th, it just has a very genuine, fun feel to it. I believe that the characters are just teens working at a summer camp. And I think that does a lot for me, because it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like they're trying to like make us believe something that's not true. It's just kind of this low budget, fun slasher, right? So going through these hunks, we've got 1958 counselor Steve, who's barely a hunk, but Jack, Bill, and Ned. Who's your favorite?
Jack.
Jack's mine too.
I mean,
and it's not just because it's Kevin Bacon.
Oh no, I'm gonna say just because it's Kevin Bacon. He was.
Oh, you say? For me, I think he's just like, I would hang out with Jack. I think he would be like a nice, fun dude to hang out with. Ned would get on my nerves. Bill, we don't really get to know much about Bill other than that, like, he's a man's man, I guess.
I mean, Bill is the kind of guy where you're just like, hey, will you play a song? And that's,
yeah,
like, all he does.
Yeah. Steve gives me major, like, you know.
Steve is a creep.
Yeah, he gives me major creep vibes, major, like, oh, no, you don't want to leave yet, do you? Like, that kind of vibe. and then 1958 counselor, we see him for literally like a minute and a half of the movie. He's just there to set up.
I think he literally said that to teenage Alice at the beginning of the movie. Oh no, you can't leave me yet. Let me.
Oh, because she doesn't want to stay
on you.
Yeah, she doesn't want to stay at the camp. So yeah, Jack is the ultimate final boy horror hunk, horror himbo.
He's the horror hunk for this one, because
And it's funny, he's the third death of the movie. So
he's pretty.
He is pretty. He's kind. Yeah. I say kind, you say scantily clad. That I think that says a lot about who we are as people.
I mean, yeah, you're looking at him one way. I'm just like, let me objectify this grade A American beef.
Oh no! If I were to roll up and start working at Camp Crystal Lake as a counselor, I would be like, let me pair with Jack because one, he's a cool dude. I know he's gonna like be a chill guy to hang out with, and two, like I'd make out with him. It'd be fine. So
I mean, who wouldn't? Come on.
Yeah,
look at him. Absolutely.
He's pretty.
And I also wrote that he has one of the most random quotes.
What'd
he
say?
This movie. When the storm is rolling through and him and his girlfriend start going into like deep, you know, personal talk, he says that the storm is going to roll through the valley. Like, oh, I wrote it down scribbly. I don't know. It's a very like deep thing to say about a storm, like ripping through the valley. And it feels a little bit off. So
is there a valley in New Jersey?
I don't know. Is the movie supposed to take place in New Jersey?
Yeah, it's Camp Crystal Lake, New Jersey. Which I only know from Freddy versus Jason, but I don't know if we'll ever cover that movie, but it would be fun.
I honestly assumed that Camp Crystal Lake happened in like North Carolina or something.
Ooh, I was completely wrong when I said that Jack was the third kill of the movie. He is the third hunk kill of the movie, but I didn't count Annie or the female counselor in the beginning in 1958. So he's actually like the fourth or fifth kill of the movie. A surprisingly high body count too, for a movie that's not that gory and really not that long. So I think overall there are,
and it happens in one night. It's all supposed to happen on a Friday night.
Yeah. I think there's, 9 kills total, not counting Mrs. Voorhees. So I guess 10 kills total, which is, it doesn't feel like that. It kind of feels like we go for a long time, probably because a lot of the kills are off screen, but it feels like we go for a long time without anybody dying.
We got to learn to love those characters before they die.
We do. We love Jack at least.
We do love Jack, which...
And Alice is fine.
I think Kevin Bacon, I also first took notice of him when he was in Tremors.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was reading up on him in this movie. I wanted to specifically find some information about him because really of the main actors, he's really, to my knowledge, the only one who is still like a successful actor, right?
Or like even getting big.
Yeah, and like, so this was...
He's the biggest star.
And I don't know what year Tremors was. I think I'm going to say like late 80s, early 90s, but...
Late 80s, because I definitely know I saw it as a kid. It's definitely okay. One that we'll have to review and pretty much just talk about Kevin Bacon.
Because he's really, in my opinion, he's the only hunk in that movie. But, you know, he's a great actor. I think he had fun with the character of Jack, even though there wasn't a lot of substance there. But he also had more substance than most of the other characters who lived longer than him. So I think that he is... our certified horror hunk of Friday the 13th. Hey you, thanks for tuning in to the inaugural episode of Horror Hunks. Your hosts were Stu Forrest and me, Chris Waltz. Join us again in 2 weeks when we discuss A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, and all the hunks involved in that movie. Horror Hunks is a Dead Oaks production with music produced by Ben Bryles. Find us on Twitter @HorrorHunks, and until next time, stay horny, don't die.